Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we thank you for tuning in to this segment of New Day. Okay, now, we have quite a bit of information we want to share with you for this segment. But before we do that, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator. And, of course, we are very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Tonight, we are going to talk about a couple of things. I'm going to, of course, give you some reports, including the updates on our visit to the UN this year. Of course, we went to the UN last year as well. And this year was very, very interesting. Last year was too, but this year was, an eye-opener, let's put it that way. Because, needless to say, we got the opportunity to observe some very, very, I must say, a little bit surprising, but not so much. And I'm going to tell you what I mean by that very shortly. But in the meantime, I just want you to know that we had a great impact on the UN this year in bringing the Million Women Movement into those international circles. Certainly, it is what is needed. It is what really, really is time for it, and we are blessed to really be able to do that. To go into an environment such as the United Nations, you begin to realize that our women who are walking through the streets, who have day-to-day kinds of jobs or day-to-day kinds of lives, they're not getting access to the information that goes up and through and around those circles. You have to kind of be connected or involved in certain kinds of organizations, and those organizations tend to be connected to the so-called powers that be. The bottom line is, we're here in the United States, you're not going to get access to what's really going on in those types of circles and those types of environments. And it's just such a blessing and an honor to be able to see this happening, to be able now to be instrumental in making certain that we do, in fact, you do, in fact, have the ability to engage, interact, and to know what's going on. With that said, I'm going to tell you what's going to be coming up for tonight's program. Let's see now. We have a couple of things happening. One in particular is the dialogue that is going to occur very shortly with the brother who is based here in Philly, but of course goes around the country and communicates with folks throughout the country in regard to something that we call the prison industrialized complex, to say the least. This brother is, of course, very familiar with the power tricks and the so-called injustice system that we oftentimes find ourselves familiarizing ourselves with, or it with us. We're talking about Brother Raza Khan Shahid, who is also the director of the Philadelphia Innocent Project here. And we're going to talk about something that I recently became acquainted with, and certainly we are going to become more acquainted with it starting tonight, because we're going to make sure that we assist in whatever way possible to begin to put this information out. But we're going to talk about a situation as it pertains to one of the sisters, the actual biological sisters of Gen 6, one of the youth or one of the young brothers who was involved in the Gen 6 situation. Apparently, his sister, or one of the sisters there, has now run into some complications, and the complications have her involved in being incarcerated. And so what we're going to do is let you hear a little bit about that story and also the kind of spins that go with that story. We're going to talk to Brother Razakhan about a letter that he has been circulating in regard to a situation pertaining to a sister. Her name is Katrina Wallace. And Katrina Wallace is, of course, the actual biological sister of Robert Bailey, who, again, was one of the victims of the Eugenics situation. It just so happens that shortly after a plea bargain was obtained, it appears that this sister, this young sister, was, it looks like perhaps set up, and at any rate, is now under a 20-year jail sentence for some alleged drugs that was never found. So we're going to really look a lot closer into what possibly could have happened for this young sister to now be facing a 20-year sentence for some drugs that seems to have not been able to be made available. This is, of course, just one of many situations that we find, certainly with our people, in the situation of injustice, in the situation of when you speak out, you most certainly could find yourself in a dilemma or find yourself in a predicament. And from what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, this sister, of course, was one who spoke out, you know, in fact, which was really the catalyst or one of the key catalysts for getting the Genesis started. So, you know, needless to say, something really has gone awry here. Something certainly has to be looked at a little closer, and we're going to do that tonight. Okay, so that's one of the things that we wanted to bring to your attention. Now, before we talk with Brother Razakhan about the letter that he sent to people like, I think, Al Sharpton and maybe Tyler Perry, I believe, I wanted to tell you why he sent these letters and, of course, give you some information in regards to the type of responses that he's gotten from his analysis in this case. Now, just so you know a little bit about Brother Razakhan, he is considered a independent paralegal. Now, what that means is many are now, you know, a lot more astute or a lot more aware of the law or some of the legal interactions. Some went to formal education or received some formal education, and many have really learned it themselves, you know, one way or another. And so some of us today are, in fact, paralegals, meaning we have the qualifications, the skills, the ability to do the same things that paralegals do. And certainly, you know, because you might not have a certificate, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you still are not a paralegal. So with that said, some, again, have formal training, and then some do not. Some are self-taught, but nevertheless, they are still paralegals. So Brother Razakhan is, of course, one of them who is self-taught. He is very well trained. He has been doing this work for quite a few years now, and with that said, has helped several people really not only deal with their cases, but to help, you know, win their cases. So that certainly gives some indication that a person does, in fact, have certain types of skills. So we're going to talk to Brother Razakhan about his analysis as far as what he feels in this particular case, because it does warrant us to look a little closer at it. Okay, with that said, before we go on to that, we are going to remind you that we need to give you two reports. One, there is a event coming up on March the 31st, and that event is going to be a special tribute, a special salute to our own Sister Pam Africa. That's right. Very recently, Brother Tony Monterio, Dr. Tony Monterio, wrote a brilliant tribute to Sister Pam, and he read it to everyone's surprise a few weeks ago at a book signing. Of course, the book signing was that for Mumia, written by Mumia and co-authored or co-written by Dr. Mark Lamont Hill. And a few weeks ago, there was, in fact, a book signing for that book. And again, to everyone's surprise, Tony Montario read a special tribute that he penned for Sister Pam Africa. And I've got to tell you, I've read many of Tony's commentaries or writings over the years because he has had a conference here in Philadelphia for a few years now, the Du Bois Conference. So I'm somewhat familiar with his writings, but I've got to tell you that that particular tribute was probably the best that I've ever seen or heard of his writings. At any rate, in dialogue in the past week or so, it was determined that we really wanted to take that a step further. This being Women's History Month, we discussed really making certain that more people knew about the work of Sister Pam Africa, and not only knew about her work, but how much people really appreciate her work and the inspiration that she also gives to so many others, especially to many young girls today who are striving to be advocates and better activists and so forth and so on. And so on March the 31st, there is going to be a tribute to Sister Pam Africa, but because of the type of spirit that she is, it's going to also be a work session, meaning since April 24th is coming, and of course every year for April 24th, there's always an activity or an event for Mumia. There is going to be one this year as well. And of course, this time there is a takeover, or what one is called Occupy, the Justice Department in Washington, D.C. on December, I'm thinking that's the other date, of course, on April the 24th. We'll be able to give you more information about that very shortly as well. But again, on April the 24th, there will be a rally, and there will be also several buses leaving to go up to the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., and again, to continue the work and the demand to now free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Certainly there has been a lot of headway, you know, especially given the fact that he is now in general population. I mean, let's face it, it took 30 years to do that, but hopefully it will take, you know, much, much, much less time for him to be now truly freed from all of that. And so the struggle does continue, and it shall continue until he is brought home. But at any rate, this session on March the 31st is going to be a work session while we pay tribute to Sister Pam and to other sisters that we're going to hail up as activists for this month of Women's History Month. It will also, again, be a work session, and that work session will entail panel discussions. I do believe that Brother Tony Montario is planning to invite Cornel West. I believe he's also planning to invite Angela Davis, and of course Mark Lamont Hill, and several others who will participate in some panel discussions, some work sessions. We're going to do a special session for sisters who are interested in learning more about being activists. Also, I believe that who's invited is Amina Baraka and Amiri Baraka. And there, you know, is a slew of other folk as well, and we'll be giving you more information about that probably next week. We will either have Dr. Tony Montario on, or we'll have you know, someone else from the group who is helping to coordinate some of the activity. But certainly between now and the 31st, we will be getting more information about this upcoming tribute to Sister Pam Africa. So it seems that that's going to take place at the Calvary Baptist Church, which I believe is located at 48th and Baltimore Avenue. And again, within the next week, we'll be able to give you more information about that as well. Okay, the other report that we wanted to give to you was again, let's see, oh, the update on what happened at the UN this past week, at least the few sessions that we were able to attend. One in particular that caught our attention was a session that talked about water. This particular session was being held by representatives from Nigeria, and there was a sister who provided information about really the need, the dire need for clean water in some of the more rural parts of Nigeria. And it was just kind of amazing to listen to the dialogue, because what the sister mentioned on several occasions was the fact that Nigeria is considered one of the more, financially stable countries in Africa. It certainly has resources. Of course, the oil is pretty vast there. But nevertheless, when you go into more of the rural areas, you run into a lot of sickness, a lot of what some might call poverty. But of course, in Africa, what we call poverty here certainly is nowhere near what's going on there. But the bottom line is, because of the limited water supply, of fresh water, of clean water, the people are really running into a lot of problems in terms of disease as well as other types of things. And so the bottom line is it is good to really be able to get the information that is necessary. So especially as women are beginning to organize and galvanize here in the States, we are also able to determine, what type of ways we can help and what types of ways we will help. And so, again, those sessions at the UN allowed us to begin to examine closer the things that, well, we kind of knew was going on, but now as women, again, here in the States are beginning to come together, are beginning to do the type of assessments that is necessary, and perhaps more important, begin to create better levels of solidarity, we now can begin to address some of these things a bit more productively and a bit more effectively. And so that was one of the sessions that we attended. Now, the one session that I, again, found so very, very interesting was one where it talked about holding the United States government accountable for violence and abuse. Now, that particular session didn't turn out the way I had anticipated, because it got a little off track in that, well, certainly the sessions are open to anyone, and because it is the type of sessions for the whole week, it's for women. Women came in from all over the world. Approximately 5,000 women registered from all over the world, certainly from all of the countries in Africa. So the sessions, of course, were attended by women from all nationalities. Well, this one particular session was, in fact, to address the issue of African women in the United States. And again, there were women from other countries attending these sessions. So when women began to talk about the concerns of African women here in the United States and the violations and abuses of our women here, it was raised that it's time that Black women, African women, speak for themselves, speak for ourselves. And so that kind of created a ripple in the dialogue, because here in the U.S., when it comes to issues dealing with women, there are usually white women who are in the forefront of representing us as Black women. Why that continues to go on in the 21st century is kind of strange, but nevertheless, that is what's happening. And so in this session in this past week, it became very clear that several of our women felt a little way about that and spoke out against it. There were European or other non-African or non-melanated women there, and you could tell that they felt a little uncomfortable. Well, because they felt uncomfortable, it seemed that some African women felt uncomfortable too, and as a result began to somewhat defend them. So, interestingly enough, you had a few women speak out and say that they felt we were all women, and therefore we should look at this issue of violence and abuse as one issue. Now, of course, a few of us felt that that was absolutely insane, but we tried to be as understanding as we can because we realized that in Africa, when it comes to having issues dealt with for our women, unfortunately, they tend to see non-African women from the United States. And so it goes without saying that they would, of course, feel that they need to stand up for those women that they feel have come to help them. So this, again, is why we must begin to focus on the development of the Black Women's Defense League and other sisterhoods that will, in fact, be very proactive, very consistent, and very committed in helping our women and girls throughout the diaspora. So I'm going to give you a little more information on that a bit later on, as well as some of the activities that we have, in fact, began to launch for the Male Women Movement, including our essay and poetry contest for girls from 7 to 17, and our upcoming national rally, the kickoff rally, to bring awareness and at some point the elimination of violence and abuse of our women and girls. Okay, I'm going to check our line. Okay, it looks like that we are ready to go to our live line, and I believe we are ready to talk with Brother Raza Khan, who is going to give us his analysis and give us a report on this situation that's taking place in Louisiana with a sister who, again, is the actual biological sister of one of the Genesis. you know, it's just so insane because I'm looking at the report briefly, and I can't make much sense of it. I mean, of course, we know that this is what happens here in the United States, that you don't have to really do anything in order to, you know, get charged with a whole bunch of stuff and certainly to be sentenced for even more. So what we're going to do is go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Brother Raza Khan Shaheed, and we're going to talk a little bit about the issue of women and incarceration, but particularly a sister who has just received roughly 20 years for a drug charge where there was no drugs to be found. And also why we're not hearing more about this, and why, since there was so much outcry for the Genesis 6, why is it now we're hearing almost nothing about this injustice with this sister? So let's see if we have Brother Raza Khan joining us on our live line. Brother Raza Khan, are you on this line? Okay. We're going to try one more line. Hold up. All right. Brother Raza Khan, are you on this line?
Yes, I'm on some line.
Okay. Great. Okay, we got you. Very
I'm
good.
On. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. How are you tonight?
Okay. Oh, good.
All right. Great. Okay, so Brother, tell us a little bit about this case with this sister. Now, I heard something about it maybe a month or so ago, and then it just totally disappeared. So I'm really, you know, thankful when you sent the email out a few days ago, you know, reminding people that this situation is still going on, and, you know, you have, of course, taken it to another level in sending letters out to other so-called notable people who do have access to the media and access to other people who can put this information out. So tell us a little bit about What motivated you to do that, and what was the response?
Well, what really motivated me was the injustice that was perpetrated against his sister. And the only crime is she was the one that orchestrated the Gina 6 protests because of her brother. You know, when I first heard about the Gina 6 situation, it came out of Ohio on a computer. Youngsters was just saying they was going to get a bus and go out there. It was like 40 of them at the time. And like 3 weeks later, it was like maybe 10,000. You know what I'm saying? Because any time you arrest children for sitting under a white-only hanging tree, I mean, it's just insane. This girl, she's never been in trouble in her life. She's been living in Gina, Louisiana all her life. She got arrested. No drugs was found. They gave her $150,000 cash bond, took her car, scared her children to death. They came in early in the morning, like 5 o'clock in the morning. They had 150 police. She said it was like 10, 15 of them standing in her bedroom with guns to her head and her children's head. Because of one individual they had in that town set all these individuals up, supposedly. You know what I mean? No drugs were found. And my concern was, where are all the so-called individuals that was crying for justice? I mean, it didn't seem just to me that they had to plead guilty to nothing. They should have went in there and arrested the district attorney and the sheriff for violating the children's constitutional rights. You know, because they got a constitutional right to complain when they have a problem. If they feel aggrieved, is the prosecutor's job, is the sheriff's job to go investigate fairly. This guy went into the auditorium, assembled all these children, and said to them, "If you complain one more time, I would take this pen and make your life a living hell." Right then, the man broke the law. Anybody that knows anything about constitutional rights know that 18 U.S.C. 241, an individual working under the color of law cannot say that. And where's the protest? I mean, I sent this out to the Ed Show. No, first I sent it to Tyler Perry. He got 6.5 million people on his page or something, Facebook thing. I'm not that good with all the, you know, the social media. But when I saw the 6.5 million people on it, I sent him a letter. He didn't respond because Al Sharpton is part of the MSNBC crew. I sent a letter to Ed Schultz because he's supposed to be a progressive individual that demands justice for everybody. So I'm asking him, what are you going to do about this? And I haven't gotten a response as of yet.
When did you send it to Al Sharpton?
Oh, I sent to him a few months ago because I've been trying to call on his radio show, but you can't do that for some reason.
Okay.
I haven't been able to reach Al Sharpton.
And you would think it being a couple of months, certainly you should have gotten it by now.
Oh, no question. So I haven't heard anything from Ed Schultz.
So,
Rachel Maddow, I'm a Senator Keith, Current TV. I'm going to send it to everybody. I mean, this should be corrected. I know it's no use of sending it to Representative Conyers and all this because they are afraid to exert the law when it benefits us. He had the power, Conyers, to arrest Walter Reeds. He had the power to do that because all he had to do was subpoena him to his hearing in Washington. And if the guy refused to come like he said he was going to refuse, because he said in Louisiana, if the boy subpoenas me, I'm not coming. That's what he said. And the President of the United States cannot ignore a congressional subpoena. If he does, the marshals come to bring him. You automatically go to jail. And they were afraid to do that.
So do you think that it would be helpful? Do you think it would be helpful if we would start a petition?
Oh, yes, it would be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be helpful.
Okay, because that's what we want to do tonight. We want to try to come up with a plan of action to see how we can get, this case reopened or get some action done with it or at least get something done. I mean, just to sit back and let this happen and not act responsibly, I mean, we just cannot do that. But let me also ask you this, Brother Azarkan. What about the sister's lawyer? Did she have ample representation? Did they just appoint someone, or did she really have someone that was really trying to fight this case?
Well, they probably would say that she had a lawyer, but I would argue that none of the Gina Six had lawyers. If they had, how do you plead guilty when somebody come after you with a shotgun, and you take the shotgun and whoop him?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's got to be trying to protect yourself. I mean, and then they charged the individual that took the shotgun from the Caucasian that came after him with possession of a firearm.
After this went in, and I mean, clearly this was not a good decision. Why do you feel that the people who were running down there so quickly, you know, dealing with it at that time, be it the Michael Bays then and the other people, why do you feel that since this has happened, they've, like, said nothing?
Because they did their job. They was sent down there to put the fire out, and they did. They watered down the demonstration, and they did. They did their job.
Mm-hmm.
And they will, and you can see the rewards of that. All of a sudden, you can't turn on the television without seeing Al Sharpton. He's always, well, I'll say it like this. If my children was there, it would be no way that I would allow them to plead them guilty because they did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm trying to explain to whoever would listen. And if you feel as though I'm wrong, I'm quoting law here. You know what I mean? Your law. Mm-hmm. I know that Dred Scott, a rule prevails in America, and we don't get no law. I mean, it don't apply to us. What the Dred Scott ruling said was a black man has no rights that a white man have to honor, and they show this repeatedly. And they won't stand up. And just they say they need a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. How do they do that when the individual that ruled on the case broke the law? Clarence Thomas, his wife got $500,000 when he ruled on that case. I mean, he didn't put it in his disclosure. He said he forgot. Or maybe he didn't understand it properly and he filled it out wrong. Then he don't need to be on no Supreme Court. I mean, you know, they talk to people like everybody just watch Fox News and just stupid as hell. You know, you got thinking people out here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His
thinking
wife,
people.
Gina Thomas, got $500,000. Mm-hmm. She was a major lobbyist for Citizens United. He shouldn't have never even been able to rule on it, period. And can go to jail now if Holder would do his job. They didn't need a constitutional amendment to get rid of Al Capone. And that's what we got in the Supreme Court. All they got
it
to do
seems
is
like
use
the
law.
More information our people get, it seems like the more information our people get, the less we become more the less we become proactive, let's put it that way.
I would agree. I would hope Tyler Perry would respond But you know, I mean, you saying you're a progressive individual, you know, standing up for equal rights, justice for all. This sister don't deserve to be in jail. 20 years. No drugs were found. And this was 5 o'clock in the morning. They had 150 police, and they only went to the black neighborhood. And 85% of the people in that gene of Louisiana is white. And they only went to the black neighborhood, 150 police, helicopters hoovering overhead, and the sheriff called it Operation Third World.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I've spoke with a few people in that area, and for whatever reason, it seemed that some of the activists down there had been convinced that this sister was involved in something, and that's why they didn't want to get, you know, more involved in it and so forth and so on. You know, it is so unfortunate now that it seems if you give folks either some money or a position or some other kind of inkling of power, it seems like we won't begin to examine a situation or use a certain type of rationale. Now, here we have a sister who was very visible in fighting the system. Yet, now that this has happened, rather than to give her the benefit of the doubt, they immediately want to say, oh, yeah, we think she was involved.
If that was the case, then they would have found something, at least one joint in our house or something. They found nothing. And that's what they do. They try to cloud, make people fearful with drug charges. You know what I'm saying? So they have an excuse to run. You know, when they caught a pocket full of OxyContin, and he done had his secretary, his housekeeper, everybody buying drugs for him. Nobody ran from him. And Ollie knew everybody knew that he sold drugs from the White House. No, I mean, and he gets TV shows and all that old kind of stuff. You know what I'm saying? They only black people run from rumors. When white folks want them to run, I ain't gonna say just white folks. The powers that be. Because they got black faces in some of them powers to be that's trying to keep us in our place. But this girl didn't absolutely
nothing. This is why it's so important that we continue to organize and really become a lot more adamant in doing the kind of work that is necessary. It just seemed like so many of our people have become so lapsed and just, you know, so unconcerned, you know, about just, I mean, not just issues of this type, but just in general, our people seem to have become just so uninvolved or unconcerned. And if it's not a corporation or a politician saying that it's okay, we don't want to do it. We don't want to get involved.
Too many
of our people, too many of our organizations.
Yeah. Yes. And then you got to examine the psychic or the mindset of a people. You know what I'm saying? Here in Gina, Louisiana, that parish, 90% of the people voted for David Duke. So, the district attorney, his uncle is the sheriff, and his grandfather was the governor. I mean, you know, because they connected. You know, they were afraid to speak out against them. This guy should have went to jail. And it's in the law.
Well, I know on Monday, I'm just looking at something. Cynthia McKinney is due to be here in Philly on Monday, and I'm sure you tend to be at that activity. Will you, do you think you'll be able to maybe say something about this matter, this issue?
Oh, no question. You say you're going to put up a petition, too? Yeah, I intend to try to say it to anybody, pass out all the information I can for to whoever is willing to try to help.
Wonderful. Okay. Well, then that's at least a beginning. And what we want to also do for those who are tuning in, we hope that you, too, will participate in some kind of way. Brother Razakhan is going to give you his email address and any other way of contacting him, and certainly we're going to do the same on this end so that we can continue to keep the flow of information going on. You know, this is Women's History Month, and not that we need a month or a day or whatever to do the right thing, but certainly if other people can utilize time periods to you know, get work done or to delegate a certain time period to get work done, well, all right, then so be it. Let us look at this time period, and let's say by the end of March the 31st, meaning by the end of this month, let's see how many signatures we can get on this petition. Let's see within the next couple of weeks if we can raise this issue up so that we can get these signatures and get it to the Justice Department or wherever we feel we need to get it to. So, Brother Razakhan, give your email address or any other information where folks can contact you. And then I want you to tell us a little bit about the Innocence Project, because all of this is connected. And folks need to know about the kind of organizations or groups or individuals that are doing this kind of work. But first, give us your email address.
It's Razakhan, RazakhanSHAHEED at AOL.com. Or you can contact me at the Philadelphia Innocence Project, and that's the Philadelphia Innocence Project at MSN.net.
Okay. So now tell us a little bit about the Innocence Project.
Well, the Innocence Project was formed for just these type purposes, for political prisoners, individuals that have been in jail 30 or 40 years for no reason, you know, where other organizations and groups are prohibited from trying to help them, because if you get money from the government or the state, grants, whatever, you know, when they tell you to back off of a group or person, whatever the case may be, that's what you have to do. Or they will cut your funding and that will close your doors down. Not saying these people do some good, you know what I'm saying? But the problem is we got to stand firmly against injustice, you know? And it makes, even with the Move 9, I look at them and say, 30 years, 33 years, for what? You know what I'm saying? And there's no chance of them getting out because the individuals that's ruling on their cases are hired by the individuals that put them in there. Rendell and Len Abrahams and you see what I'm saying? So how can they possibly have a fair and impartial hearing? Yeah, but you know, but you won't have groups of lawyers or whatever the case may be to stand up and say that this is totally unjust. Even with the Supreme Court justice they got up here, Ron Castile. You know, everybody was on McMahon about the tape that was, you know, because Len Abraham had exposed the tape, but Ron Castile was the one that orchestrated. He was the one that developed the tape. He sits on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. So by right, all cases that he that has been ruled in Pennsylvania since 1989, I believe it was, when he was a district attorney, should be under review by the Justice Department, because these people couldn't have got a fair trial with his mindset. He developed that tape, how to keep black people off the trial, how to keep black folks from having a fair trial. So how can he, you know, how can he sit on the Supreme Court and rule on these people? But you have very few people that would be willing to say that. Huh? I mean, that's what we...
those are the type of things that we work. They can go right to YouTube. They can go right to YouTube and see him instructing up-and-coming prosecutors on how not to select a juror.
Right, right. But tell them to do a little more homework and find out who was running the district attorney when he did that. The same guy that's sitting on the Supreme Court right now. So he, I mean, it's just Philadelphia should be under martial law from the federal people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because they say that this is not a pattern of conduct. But then they just had to close down the whole 39th district, let 200-some people out because these police was running around framing people. How can they just possibly overlook all of that? See, we can't allow them to overlook that. And that's why we fight as hard as we do. Petitions, whatever we have to do, that's what we do. Oh, go ahead.
Now, Brother Razakhan, when you wrote the article, when you wrote the letter or what have you, you phrased it as the Genesis sellout.
Yes,
so,
it was.
So why specifically did you phrase it in that way?
Because that's basically what it was, a sellout. These children had no business being charged in the first place. And after they were charged, they get prominent lawyers to go down there and plead them guilty. To what? You know what I'm saying? If somebody come in your house with a shotgun and you take it from him, and would you plead guilty to possession of a gun because you took the intruder? I mean, it makes no sense. And how could it make sense to any of these guys? These guys is prominent lawyers. And I asked a few lawyers from the NAACP and other places when I go to certain events. Even Professor Ogletree. I say, if I'm wrong, explain to me how. He said, you're not. I said, well, what is the problem, man? This is why our children have no respect for leadership, because we have none. They see us being sold out all the time. So their thing is, get the money too. What the hell? Everybody else is. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't have that strong, positive leadership to protect them. How can a lawyer...
I mean,
think about it. How can a lawyer go in there and say, and what really got me was they was bragging about what a marvelous job they'd done. And I said, I just can't believe this. And then after, the, you know, because I had just stopped, dealing with it for a minute until this girl got locked up. And they had been planning on locking her all the time. They just waited 3 weeks after, she was sentenced. I mean, they waited 3 weeks after the Gina 6 people accepted the plea deal.
And I think Katrina is, what, approximately 31 now?
Beg your pardon?
I think the sister Katrina is roughly 31. Is she 31 years of age right now?
Well, yeah, she's somewhere in that area. I thought she was 29. That's what the article said in the paper. She got two young kids, never been locked up in her life, and they give $150,000 cash bail, and no drugs were found. I mean, that is atrocious. And one individual supposedly set all these people up with some type of hidden camera or something like that, And nobody wants to know what happened. How?
Certainly at 29, 30, 31 years of age, spending 15, 20 years in jail. I mean, that's, and again, for a charge that cannot be, the evidence cannot be shown. I mean, there's definitely something is not only wrong with that picture, something has definitely got to be done about it.
Absolutely.
So, now, because this place is in the Louisiana area, and I'm just wondering, there used to be something known as the Conference of Black Lawyers, and,
mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking again that as a plan of action, you know, at least perhaps we can contact them, and if nothing else, at least perhaps get some kind of, you know, legal counseling, advice, or maybe some leads that might help us to further getting this information out.
Yeah, anything. I mean, anything is good. You know, I've been emailing and writing everybody I know. You know,
okay.
A petition would be a good thing. I put it on my Facebook. I ain't got but 130 friends. You know what I mean? But I got friends that got 2,000 or 3,000 friends. Hopefully, they will spread the word because that's what it takes. I was hoping that whatever that young group in Ohio that rented that first bus said that they was going down there, we need to load up some buses and go down there again.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it would take.
But again, it seems that if it's not hype, if it's not something or someone that, you know, has a lot of juice, it seems that our people don't be, we won't move, we won't get motivated.
Yeah.
It just seems to take now that personality or that, you know, that person that's recognized in order to get.
Yeah. But they go in to save the powers that be, because when it first started, it wasn't nobody that was recognized. Only when the numbers hit past 30,000 did the Al Sharptons and the Michael Bazins and all them guys started showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And they went down there with one purpose, to save them the powers that be. You know, because there's no telling what might have happened. I mean, maybe some real lawyers would have showed up with them, you know. But once these guys take the front seat, that prevents anybody else from coming in there that's truly arguing in their behalf. I would have loved to have seen Alton Maddox somewhere, anywhere. You know what I mean? Because we need lawyers like that.
Sure. That's right. You know, as I'm looking over the report, and you mentioned earlier, it's called Operation Third Option. I mean, that doesn't even sound like anything that is really legitimate. Let's put it that way. You know,
it sounds
like something that they just threw together. Operation Third Option.
I immediately shot in my mind. Operation Third World, like they bombing Gaddafi or somebody. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the mindset that they have. Yeah.
And the other thing that I happen to notice is it appears that there was only one black woman on the jury.
Okay, I didn't even get anything relating to that. You know.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of these things, as we begin to examine it, because, again, in putting a petition together, I'm trying to review as much information so that, you know, we know how to compile it. And as I'm looking through some of the things now, this is what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Apparently, as in many of the cases, there is a disproportionate amount of black folks on the jury.
Okay.
And it seems that that's also the case in this situation as well. Mm-hmm.
The information I got it from Jordan Flattery. He writes for the Huffington Post, and both of these articles I got, they come from his writing. Say Gina 666,
right. I got one
revenge for civil rights protests.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And
I got one from him too.
Oh, okay.
Mhm.
And it clearly says that, you know, out of all the activity that they were involved in, they still had no drugs. None. And I can't say, you know, I'm thinking, how could these people get found guilty? How could they go to jail? I mean, what are they pleading guilty to? Somebody is advising them to do that. And they're showing you what happens when you don't plead guilty. You get 20 years. And the sheriff is making fun of the whole situation. You know what I mean? He's telling his people, this is not the good old boys. Huh?
You know what, I'm looking at, as you're saying that, I just want to read something directly from the article that was written. And it says, although no drugs were seized, a dozen people were arrested based on testimony and a video evidence provided by a police informant.
Yeah, Evan Brown,
So far, most of those arrested on that day have pleaded guilty. That's crazy. And
And basically, that's what it was. One individual, you know? And in that same article, he just happened to mention that in 1991, you know what I mean? LaSalle Parish, Louisiana, David Duke received the highest percentage of votes in any place in Louisiana. But that just shows me where they're coming from. As simple as that. And anybody that went down there should have had that in mind. And that's why he told Conyers, Congressional Black Caucus boss Conyers, if the boy subpoena me, I'm not coming. And when our children hear that, you know, how are they supposed to feel? They know they get no protection.
Wow. That is just, again, clear cut and right in your face. I mean, there's no way for there not to be any what is known as, you know, substantial evidence. There's no way that one can reasonably think that this thing should be going down like we're seeing it. No evidence? How can there be a conviction with no evidence?
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
It really don't.
We're talking about this is not even circumstantial.
And then when you think in terms of a surprise raid, 5 o'clock in the morning, and you don't find nothing, 150 police, helicopters, and all that kind of stuff, and you find nothing.
My brother, you know, that's usually their routine. I mean, for real, when they do those raids, they usually do them, you know, early morning kind of thing. That's kind of their pattern. But find nothing, then to convict this woman for 15 to 20 years with no evidence. And, you know, see, what I think people don't realize is when the opposition see that we do not respond, it gives them the go-ahead to do other things.
That's right. Absolutely.
That's the part that we don't tend to understand. We think that, okay, well, it's not happening to us, or, you know, this is not affecting me directly. But what people are not realizing is when they see we're not responding and we're not taking action, it just lends to their next step of terror.
Boy, boy, boy. Yeah, you said it. And
wow.
Louisiana is just in your face, but this type of activity and behavior happens across the country when it comes to dealing with black defendants, especially young black defendants.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. And needless to say, as we are beginning to see, they're starting to see it a lot as well, the increased population for the prison industrialized complex is now who?
Mm-hmm.
Black women.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
That is now the new. So, we better really begin to wake up and begin to take some real action. I don't know why it is that people tend to just want to go to sleep, but obviously, you know, the enemy is seeing that that's what's going on, and they're taking complete advantage of that. So, again, family, we want all of you to know that we are going to develop a petition. We'll let you know within the next couple of days when the petition will go online. I would estimate Monday we should have it ready so that we can announce it. When Cynthia McKinney comes to Philadelphia on Monday, we're going to try to have this petition ready to go online at that point. And Brother Razakhan will also be raising this issue again at that forum. And we'll continue this dialogue as we proceed through the rest of Women's History Month, because we're going to try to earmark that time period, March the 31st. You know, we like to get a couple of thousand signatures, if possible. And I certainly think we can. We need to. So, again, in recognition of Women's History Month, let this be your action or your tribute or your recognition. When we put the information out there to you about the petition, please sign it, pass it on, and continue to talk more about this particular issue. We're talking about a sister who is, we believe, roughly 30 years old presently. Her name is Katrina, and she is the biological sister of one of the Jenna Six. And you all are probably very familiar with the case of the Jenna Six. Some of you probably were directly involved. Well, why is it when it comes to our women, when it comes to our girls, there seems to be little or less emphasis or motivation or inspiration to get involved? That's not the style. Brother Razakhan, thank you so much for taking this time to share this story and share this information. Please give your email address out again so that folks can continue to communicate with you, and you know, that way you can get their email address and any information that you're sending out, they'll be able to be on your e-list.
Okay, and thank you for having me. It's Razakhan Shahid, RazakhanShahed at AOL.com.
Okay.
Email me and
all
I will get right back with you immediately, because this is an urgent matter.
All right. And again, we're talking about the sister's name is Katrina Wallace.
Yes.
And we're talking about another trumped up charge. We're talking about, I've read two or three articles. One indicated 15 years, the other indicated 20 years. The bottom line is it should be no years because there was no drugs found. And what it seems that we are seeing here is that the police took the opportunity to do a drug sweep, which is what they do sometimes, but a way to get this sister caught up in that is a way to remove her or to take revenge on her when they know that this is something they were going to do, but it seemed like they were able to tie her into it in order to get her out of the way. So, you know, this is nothing new from what they do. Now, obviously, it appears maybe somebody up in there was, you know, doing something, because other than that, why would they be admitting to it? So so at the same time, because you have some people admitting to something, that don't mean everybody was involved. But it seems that these people have taken the opportunity to include some people that they wanted in there. So
you said it right, because I have a theory. You know what I mean? But it's just a theory. I thought that the informant that they had, Evan Brown, went around showing narcotics to these people, taking pictures of it, acting like they did something or gave something, and took it back and went to the next party and incriminated them.
Right.
How would it be possible,
very possible
for all of these people to be arrested and no drugs were found? Because their informant had all
right.
the drugs.
Right. And that's really the bottom line. Nothing was found. How, I mean, you know, the whole idea of going into a court and arguing a case is really supposedly, at least to some degree, based on what they call evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So how does a verdict or how does a conviction come about with no evidence? No tangible evidence. That in itself is suspect.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
That in itself tells you something that's definitely not, you know, kosher here, Vivek. No evidence?
Because you know these people don't have money to challenge the tape to see if they're authentic. See, was the doctor that altered or put together in a manner that, you know, it shouldn't have been. You know, people with money can get experts, you know what I'm saying, to examine the tape to see had it been doctored or manufactured or, you know, because it shows you what that Republican guy went to the Acorn place, you know what I'm saying, and manufactured tapes. And, you know, but they defunded the people before they found out that they got lied on them. And never, even after they found out that they were innocent, they never gave them the funding back. Because the purpose was to close them down. And the purpose here was to punish this girl for starting that protest. And that would have a chilling effect on anybody else that tried to go up against the powers that be. If we don't help her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So once again, we see an example being made.
Yes.
Because that's what they tend to do in order to intimidate people and to discourage them from getting involved. They'll set an example of what they want others to see. That if you do something, this is what's going to happen to you.
And this is why I'm thinking nobody down there is opening their mouth. And that's just pitiful. And I will continue to stay on the powers that be up here, you know, because eventually Al Sharpton is going to have to be somewhere, you know what I mean, where I can talk to him personally. You know, you can duck phone calls and emails and all that other kind of stuff, but you got to be somewhere where you addressing crowds.
Yes.
And you'll see real people.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate because I think he was just in Philadelphia very recently.
Yeah.
In the past week or so.
When I found out about it, he was gone. Yeah. And then the next thing I know, he was in Atlanta, you know, with Martin Luther King's son. But he's supposed to be back again. So, you know, we
yeah,
will
I'm
see
sure.
him. Yeah, I'm
I am sure. You know, Philly is that kind of place.
Yeah. So, hopefully, beg your pardon?
I'm saying, you know, at any rate, we're going to do what we're supposed to do. So, we're going to continue to, you know, bring about awareness and any kind of action that we could possibly bring. You know, we need to consult with the few black lawyers that we do know, who could give us at least some, perhaps some additional insight. We need to consult with them, and maybe there's some other action steps that they may be able to convey as well. But we're going to do what we need to do on this part, so on our parts, rather. So, you know, whatever them other folks do or don't do, it's okay. We're going to do what we're supposed to do.
That's all we can do. Yeah, I appreciate you bringing this out, though.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that.
Certainly. And we're going to be doing that for the rest of the month, you know, in terms of making certain that we get this petition out. And, you know, even thereafter, we'll continue to monitor and to make certain that we're able to provide any updates. I'm going to see if I can get the sister's mailing address, and then that'll be something else that we can maybe ask people to do, is to, you know, send her some mail, because, you know, that's always helpful as well, that people know let her know that people are concerned. So that'll be something else that we'll look at going in the next week, obtaining her mailing address so that we can at least encourage folks to communicate with her.
Okay, that'll really be good. And send her sister a few dollars, too. We all know she can use it. I mean, $2-$3. Anything you got in your pocket, I mean, anything you can send would be a help.
That's right.
And I've been thinking about her children
ever
since. You know what I'm saying? They was traumatized. I mean, can you imagine waking up 5 o'clock in the morning, you got 10 police in your bedroom with guns everywhere, and they wouldn't even allow her to comfort them.
Yeah.
I mean, that was her major reason for being so upset concerning that particular way they did it, you know, because what they put her children through.
Absolutely.
And because her mother was so
vocal. Well, we
both... Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I'm thinking she's going to be next. And, you know, it just ain't no question in my mind. Yeah.
Wow. Well, we will continue to monitor the situation and certainly continue to provide, you know, as much information as we can. And again, next week we should have the, you know, it shouldn't be difficult. Once we find, you know, what facility she's in, it shouldn't be difficult at all to get the address, you know, the mailing address. So by next Saturday's show, we should have that available. And we'll
Can individuals call this number from anywhere, or do they have to get go online to hear your broadcast? I'm at
No, they can call
in Washington, Baltimore, places.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All I have to do is call Dallas number anywhere.
Okay.
Anywhere. And they can hear it on their phone. You can hear it on their phone or online. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what do you do to hear it online?
To hear it online, you just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/EmpressChi, C-H-I. And anyone can hear, after tonight's show, they can hear it anytime. Once it's done live, it goes in the archives, and it's available at any time.
Okay,
so what I'll do, Brother Razakhan, is I will send that to you in an email, just so you'll have it in the email.
Okay, so I can
anytime
forward it to my...
Sure can.
Okay.
Yep, once our shows are aired, they go into the archive. All you have to do is know the date of the show you want, and it'll be right there for anyone at any time.
Okay, that is fabulous. Boy, we got to... I know you work all the time. You know what I mean? But this is just... it's just so hurtful the way it happened. I mean, and the silence is deafening. Wow. You know, everybody has their little problems, whatever. I mean, family problems or financial problems, whatever the case may be. But if I had to get on a bicycle and go down to Gina 6, I wish I could go to Louisiana right now. That's where I would be.
Wow. Well, you know, it's interesting, but I think, again, I'm just curious. I think, again, one of our plan of action would be to send that letter to Michael Bazin. Because
yeah.
he was very instrumental in mobilizing for that Genesis 6 journey, for going down there. So it would be real interesting to see how he now responds.
Well, he didn't respond to me. Maybe they would respond to you. You know, the emails, I can't get nobody on the phone, you know. Well, if everybody write them, send them emails, whatever.
right.
You know?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, yep. Everybody needs to be sending it to him and to Al Sharpton.
Yeah, yeah. When I send this information out concerning the radio show, I will make mention to that too, and I will give them the information that I got on Al Sharpton, Bazin, and all, quite a few of them other individuals that was down there. Tanya's, Jesse Jackson, because they was in Washington with the fake hearings, you know, and you hear nothing from them.
Okay. Well, what I will do is a little later on, I'm going to send you the link for the, if anyone wants to hear the show, and you'll have that in your email so that you can send that out whenever you're ready. And we'll also include the plan of action, what we've come up with so far, which, of course, is a petition. We get a petition ready, as well as we're going to ask everyone who can to email and or write to Michael Bazin, Al Sharpton, and Just Guess.
Yeah.
And I'm sure
and we're
going to
write the sister, too.
Right, right. We're going to get the sister's mailing address so that we can write to her. So, I think in an hour and a half, we come up with, I think, a good plan of action to start with. And certainly something that I know is going to make a difference.
Yes.
All right. So, family, we are down to our last few minutes for our program tonight, and we've been talking with Brother Raza Khan Shahid, who is also the director of the Innocent Project here in Philadelphia. And what you're hearing is some of the work from the Innocent Project and also just from Concern, brother and sister, and those of you who are also concerned. We're feeling your energy as well. You know, please pass this information on. If you need to get in touch with me, you certainly can do so at nationalmwm@aol.com. We will be sending out an e-blast later on this week with some additional information. Hopefully, again, we're going to obtain, as soon as we can, the mailing address for Sister Katrina Wallace. And certainly on Monday, we expect to have a petition ready to be circulated. So with that said, if you all have any suggestions or ideas, comments, or anything else, please feel free to forward that to us. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. And we'll be back next week. So next week we'll open up the phone lines for you and also the chat room. And we want to remind you again that we will be celebrating here in Philadelphia a tribute to Sister Pam Africa on March the 31st. We're pretty certain it's going to be at the Calvary Baptist Church. We'll be able to confirm that for you in the next couple of days. And it's a work session. Remember, it's a work session for all who are concerned. We'll be coming together to deal with organizing further for the April 24th event activity, which is supposed to go to D.C., and certainly the ongoing work as it pertains to freeing Mumia Abu-Jamal. All right, Brother Raza Khan, you got some last words for us, or final words for us for tonight?
Hope we all get on board, and let's get this sister out. And I thank you for having me on.
Oh, brother, indeed. Look, anytime, if you hear some updates or whatever before I do, just give me a call, let me know, and we'll get you back on.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank
you. All
right,
family, we thank all of you also for tuning in tonight, and we will be back next week. And my name is Empress Chi, and again, if you wish to communicate with us, you certainly can do so, nationalmwm@aol.com. And again, we will keep you posted. We will be at an event on Monday, which, of course, Cynthia McKinney will be at that event. Brother Riley Khan will, of course, be raising this issue or bringing this issue of the sister, Katrina Wallace, on Monday, and we expect to have the petition ready for you also. Before we close out, we want to remind you that the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of African Women and Girls is underway. There is a kickoff rally here in Philadelphia on May 12th at 15th in JFK. Also, presently, Million Woman Movement has a essay and poetry competition for girls 7 to 17. If you'd like a information about that or a registration form, again, you can email nationalmwm@aol.com. And lastly, but certainly not least, coming in October is the National Million Woman March Convention. This convention is going to kick off several campaigns, including for 2013, the Year of the Black Girl. We'll tell you more about that next week. Until then, family, we thank all of you again for tuning in. This is New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. I want to thank the sisters out in the Trenton area for hosting a beautiful event yesterday for Women's History Month. Sister Ma'ati and the other sisters there in the Trenton area, thank you for inviting me and for also hosting a very uplifting, powerful event. We know there are many activities going on throughout this month, but remember, African women every day make history. And certainly we will continue to uphold our position as the mother of civilization. So as you continue to think about history or herstory for this month, make certain that you remember that African women, black women, is indeed the mother. All right, family, we thank all of you again, and we look forward to talking with you and communicating with you again next week. Until then, we say Ma'at Hotep, which is, of course, the representation of peace and justice. And of course, we say that there can be no Hotep without Ma'at. There can be no peace without justice. Until next week, Tu Tainana.